Welcome, everyone. This is a special episode of What the Bark, where we'll discuss new genetic testing around the ADAM-TS3 variant test. The information provided in the podcast is for general information only, and we always recommend speaking to your veterinary professional for expert advice. Hello and welcome to all of our two and four-legged listeners, and welcome back to What the Bark. We are doing something a little bit different this episode. It's just going to be myself and everyone's favorite geneticist, George. Welcome, George.
No guest,
but we thought we'd change it up a bit. So every now and again this year, we're going to have a bit of a powwow between George and myself, and we're going to go deep into a particular topic that breeders are asking us about. You know, they're asking us questions, and we thought, you know, let's look into this and have a discussion, see if we can get to the bottom of some of these curly questions.
What a great idea. Great way to sort of try and help people with questions, especially some relating around sort of the genetic questions. You know, though I'm not an expert, I will, you know, try and assist where I can. Those that know genetic George knows that he sort of tries to keep it fairly open and honest, doesn't get very controversial. You know, I'm not one of those ones that's going to create a lot of hysteria here.
Surely not. No, that's not George.
That's why we've got you here, Nathan, to make sure I don't.
I've got to settle you down a bit, but we've got a big and important topic to kick off with this year. And I think this is a question, you know, as Right Paul, we often get asked, as well as we're sort of moderating the health tests that breeders are doing on our platform. And George, I know you get this question a lot, but we thought we'd kick off with a particular disease which has become, you know, a lot more spoken about in the last, probably, would you say, 6 to 12 months?
Totally. Last 12 months has been sort of, this test has been something that's been, you know, reached out to, you know, Orivet, can you look at developing this disease? One that I haven't been, you know, too excited about developing based on just really the amount of questions it's going to pose and really whether it has a huge significance in bettering the health of specific breeds. But, you know, we still do it. We still offer it. And yeah. Seven
digits and numerals, yeah, and letters, yes. Yeah. So let's get it right. It's ADAM-TS3. And it's something that, you know, we see pop up in breeder forums. George gets emailed about it. And a lot of breeders are asking questions like, what is it? Why do I have to do it? Why is it now included in my full breed profile? So we thought, let's dive into that and try and help debunk some of those key questions that breeders are always asking.
And let's start with, if anyone's looking for the paper that all this is based on, the paper's called An ADAM-TS3 Missense Variant is Associated with Norwich Terrier Upper Airway Syndrome. It's been published in the Journal of the PLOS Genetics Journal in May 16, 2019, and it's published by Marchant et al. So usually when you see a publication, Nathan, those that want to know who the important people are, it's the person at the start and the person at the end. All the other people in the middle are just people that have...
It's the et al. Along.
Yeah, it's the et al. But, you know, when I did my research, I also came across... I think the key person involved in the research here is a person called, and Nathan, you're on this podcast to help me with my English. You know, English is my second language. Pronunciation, we're going to come across
it. I didn't know that it was your second language.
No, it's my first, but people think it is my first.
Oh, okay, right. You've fooled me.
You're going to help me because if there is one thing in this science we're going to come across, there's a lot of seven syllable Greek, Latin words that I'm going to need you to help me with. But the gentleman that played a key role in all this is a gentleman called Jeffrey Schoenbeck from the University of Edinburgh. And he was the key player, but he was also involved in a really nice paper which sort of led to this, which was a paper in Genetics in 2013. It's 193 brackets 2, that's the volume number. He's the key author with Elaine Ostrander, and it's called The Genetics of Skull Shape Variation.
Yes. So and that's what it is, right? The test is a respiratory test. It's airways, is that right?
Correct. It's an airway distress syndrome test. You know, when you look at it, it sort of all comes down to these type of cephalic breeds. And Nathan, you can help me here. There is, of course, the dolichocephalic. So the dolichocephalic are the long skulls with long, slender noses. And if you had to guess, who do you think that might be?
You think your greyhounds, I'm guessing, or your whippets?
So whippets, salukis, the collies, the rough collies, mm-hmm. the smooth collies. Then you have your mesocephalic.
Oh, that was sounded very Greek. That's probably your in-between. Meso is sort of like the mesomorph body shape, so you're probably in between.
Correct. And they're, of course, your Labradors, your German Shepherds. Mm-hmm. They're in the mesoc. And then there is this brachycephalic that we all hear about, mm-hmm. which is the short nose, flat face, yes. which is the...
you know, your bulldogs, your pugs, your, you know, Boston Terriers, those types of breeds.
The interesting thing is that this mutation was found in a mesocephalic, the Norwich Terrier.
Interesting. Yeah, I mean, it's all been based off that one breed, and most of the papers obviously have been focused on that one breed.
Mm-hmm. And what I love, I did some reading, and I was quite excited by this. This is an interesting fact. Did you know that the dolichocephalic breeds tend to be less engaged? They're not easily startled, and they recover better from unexpected situations.
Interesting. Maybe because they've got that distance between their nose and their eyes, and they can look at things with a bit more perspective.
Whereas the brachycephalic, they tend to be more engaged by their owners, you know, seem to have a higher human-directed play index is what I read. Interesting, isn't it?
Very interesting.
Evolution has shown you that the flat face is more human sort of face and they have more of a human direction. That's interesting. Mm. That's why you need to read that paper, what the genetics of the skull shape.
So we've got sort of the 3 degrees of skull sort of length. We've got the long, the medium, and the flat-faced.
Correct. So grab your paper. Now, we have this saying, don't we? Don't always believe what you read off the internet.
Mm.
But you can believe scientific publications.
Yeah.
So if you
that have been peer-reviewed.
Correct. We always say peer-reviewed, published, or if not published, at least presented by a reputable laboratory.
Mm. And so what did they identify in this paper? What did they find in the Norwich Terrier?
Well, this paper then that we're talking about is the paper of the Norwich Terrier, where they found a particular mutation which was responsible for an upper airway syndrome in the Norwich Terrier. And surprisingly, so it all presented clinical signs of BOAS. Help me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can answer that one. Brachycephalic obstructive airway syndrome.
Correct. So with the Norwich Terrier being a mesocephalic breed, they are one of the breeds that are predisposed to this airway syndrome.
Mm.
And they screened them and found a specific mutation. And for those that want to know, it's a risk allele and it changes a G to an A. So, you know, your normal DNA sequence has this sequence which has a G. And then if you're positive for it, it substitutes it for an A. But remember, it is a risk allele. It doesn't mean that when you have it, you will show symptoms. It is a risk.
So they found effectively that this particular allele, if it was positive, then there was an increased risk of potentially developing BOAS.
And then what they also found, which is where all the controversy is and where most of my questions come about, is that they also found that this mutation segregates in two other breeds, the French and the English Bulldog.
Mm.
And from the current data we've done, my head scratching is that 98% of our English Bulldogs tested so far test positive for the mutation, which is ridiculous. Not 98% have an airway distress syndrome.
Mm. I mean, we do know that obviously Bulldogs are predisposed to that issue, so it would make sense that they have, you know, some kind of risk marker associated with it.
It's like the IVDD. Every short-limbed dog tests positive for it, yet it doesn't have invertebral disc disease. Mm. So again, let's have a look. I'm going to give you this is really exciting. Let's do a live stats of what we currently have in our system of this disease. So let me go to...
Yeah, we're diving into the... George is typing on his keyboard. We're diving into the Aurovet database.
That don't know, we do have access to a whole lot of data that we can put together for any breed club. So let's go airway distress or the Adam TS3 risk marker test. We're going to do, let's go bulldog. And of course, we're going to do, you know, we always get controversy. Is it the British? Is it the English? It's the bulldog, the British yep. bulldog, we call it. We're going to select the breed as the British bulldog. Let me just type in here now.
Yeah. So I guess, I mean, in many ways, this has been identified in the Norwich Terrier as, you know, a marker for non-brachycephalic breeds, but ultimately for the brachycephalic breeds, which we're going to sort of talk us through, it does make sense that a majority of them would potentially have that risk marker.
When I look at the data, I'm looking at data across all you know, whether you're a member of the ANKC, whether you're a member of the MDBA, whether you're a member of RPBA, whether you're a member of Right Paw, whether you're a member of Puppies, whatever it is, of all the data that we have, and we have tested, let me just tell you in total about 27. We're doing this live. This is great. 140, yeah. About 163 dogs. For this distress syndrome, and this is English or British bulldog, sorry, yep. Only 1.94% have tested negative.
Wow.
1.94% have tested negative. Mm. A staggering 83% have tested positive, two copies. And there's around about 11% that are carriers. So I'm telling you, it can't be that there is that much of the population. People need to see it as a risk. You have it, whether you develop BOAS or airway distress syndrome is something that you need to verify using your old traditional methods. So this is why I always recommend use the result wisely. Don't use it to make a key breeding decision. Could you imagine if we wiped out 83% of the English bulldogs based on this?
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, in many ways, it, you know, if we had never done this test, you would assume that, you know, if it's a risk marker for BOAS, then those, you know, extremely brachycephalic breeds would naturally have that potentially anyway, and that's why obviously so many are coming back positive in carriers. So, you know, it makes sense that they would be a risk marker for BOAS, and then ultimately, you know, you have to still do the BOAS test and the BOAS testing, which is a, you know, a physical test that you can do with your vet.
So as Jeffrey Schoenbeck says, and I'm going to quote this, it is not the only factor that contributes to this condition. Okay, it is one gene. And I know what's going to happen now, Nathan, as we're sort of talking here, there'll be French bulldog people saying, tell me about the French bulldog. What are the statistics for them? So you know
Let's answer that question.
Let's get in there, you know. Because in the end, there's a famous saying my maths teacher used to tell me, statistics never lie. And this is what we're doing here. We're giving you the data. Giving you the data here.
This is great. I mean, this is the beauty of being able to test with Aurovet is that, you know, we then have access to this data and it actually pushes the breeding world forward. So that's great.
The good news about the French bulldog is that it's a better story for them in that 75.78% that we have tested, and this is over, I'm looking at my data, over 1,100 French bulldogs, 75.78% are negative. No copy of the variant.
Wow. So it's almost the complete inverse of the British bulldog, but obviously a larger sample size.
Correct. Sample size. I'm now including this in a full breed profile, and included in some breeds where people are going, why? So I included in the Cavalier, I included in the Cavoodle, I included in some of the other Boston Terriers. Why? I want to get some data. Data. I just want to gather some data. Interestingly enough, you know what I'm going to say? Which is very surprising. I've not had one Norwich Terrier test for it.
I mean, there's not too many Norwich Terriers in Australia.
So when I look at my data and I plug it in, I've not had one Norwich Terrier test. It would be interesting to any Norwich Terrier breeder listening out there. This is a call out, Nathan. We will test any Norwich Terrier, no charge. let's get some data.
Yeah, let's do it. But that's really interesting. So I imagine, obviously, you know, you've got your French bulldog breeders, your British bulldog breeders who are, you know, wanting to really understand, you know, what, how do I read into this? You know, how do I read into this result? And I guess that's what you were talking about before. It could cause a lot of concern and, you know, panic from breeders if they've started, you know, doing this test and it comes back positive or a carrier and they're trying to understand, well, how do I interpret this? Do I need to make breeding decisions based on this? And it sounds like from what you were saying before, it's more of a risk marker and it's something which you need to sort of, yeah, treat with care and caution as well.
And Nathan, let's not forget the key decision when it comes to any breeding is, yes, health is important. And I'm talking about, you know, whether you're doing patellas and hips and elbows and all those other things and x-rays and cardiograms and genetics and all that. But, you know, 98% of what a breeder breeds becomes a pet. So temperament is key. And so, you know, they're the sort of things you can't test for. And I'm going to quote again from the author. And these are in italics, taken straight off. He concludes that there are additional genetic risk factors that, if inherited, will likely lead to airway disease in dogs, regardless of their face shape.
Yeah.
You know, he's even stating, you know, the challenge ahead is to try and integrate these ideas and implement sensible breeding practices and treatments that consider various health risks, including those presented by the mutation of animal. It's exactly what we're saying. It's one risk. You've got other diseases. There are other more serious diseases to focus on. There is temperament to focus on. A lot of things you just can't. A lot of people ask me this question. Breeding isn't just one simple, I'm going to do get one litter and it's going to be right the first time. If you look at most,
it's generations and generations.
It's been in the game and understanding it for a very, very long time.
And there are tests, obviously, that go beyond just, you know, looking for that ADAM TS3 mutation. Obviously, you can do, you know, x-rays. You can measure the, you know, the sort of the skull effectively to, you know, you can look at the stenotic nares. You can look at, you know, the trachea as well. So all of those things, you know, also contribute to BOAS. Not just necessarily the ADAM TS3 mutation. So there's a wider spectrum rather than just looking at this one result.
Correct. No, geez, Nathan, I'm very impressed there. You're almost like a vet. You remind me, your partner's a vet, aren't you?
I feel like every now and again, you know, you learn through osmosis, but also, you know, these are important tests that a lot of right paw breeders are doing. And you know, we do spell out on every brachycephalic breeder's profile, you know, what are the tests that they're doing? Are they doing hips? Are they doing trachea? Are they doing spinal x-rays? All of those things are, you know, also contributing factors to prevalent diseases in the French and British bulldog and other brachy breeds. But I think there's a lot of paranoia about this one particular test because it's new and people might not know enough about it.
Yep. So look, it's an interesting one. And I thought, While we're looking, let's look at some, you know, some other breeds as well and see how it all works. And you're right, there's a whole number of tests. We're even talking now about, which we maybe will talk about in our next topic, is the the screw tail test. Now look at the Boston Terrier, 98% are negative. There's some interesting graphs and subsequent data in the paper that you could look at too about the 114 breeds they looked at for the variant. And maybe we can have a look at its table S3. Let's go to the paper and have a look again. Let's go. The paper, as we said, was the ADAM. Sometimes I get this wrong because I do the ADAMS T3 when it's ADAM TS3.
Yes.
So, yeah, it is creating a lot of discussion. It's got people asking me, is it right to be?
That's what I was going to ask you, George. What are the most common questions that you get asked? And, you know, if you could give your answers now to all of the questions that you get asked, you know, what would you be saying to breeders that are curious about this?
What does this positive result mean? How do I use that effectively? My dog doesn't have any airway distress, but it's tested positive. That's the key question.
That's the key question.
So what we're trying to answer is it doesn't mean you have it. It means, like every disease, you are positive at risk. To assess the risk or penetrance, which varies across many diseases across breeds, you need to revert to some of the traditional ways of screening it. Maybe you visit a vet every 2 years and assess any airway distress to them, do a BOAS. Maybe you visit a vet every 2 years and you assess the eyes when you're PRA positive. It is probably the key question that I get. And people go, then what's the, that's ridiculous. What's the use of a genetic test then if I can't use that information? Well, my argument is you can use a negative result well, you can use a carrier result well. Unfortunately, a positive result simply means you've got two copies of a gene and you're at risk.
And it means you need to take a little bit more care with that particular dog, and yeah, there's a bit more sort of due diligence, as you said, a bit more digging you need to do and physical tests that come with it.
So, you know, in the end, you know, there's also a lot of questions I get is people have already tested a dog and they want to test it. Yes, we can test on an existing sample. Sometimes people struggle to find the test because they look for, you know, the different, if it's under airway distress syndrome. It's there. Sometimes I've got, like I said, some of the controversy. I've had some questions from people ask me, why have you added it to the breed? It's just information. I want to try and gather some data. If 100% of the breed test is negative, that's fine. Some of the questions I get asked is, why is it found in that? Why does it segregate in those breeds? Why is it segregating in the bulldog and the French bulldog? And my feeling to that would be is because the gene is obviously linked to something, well, it's critical in that breed, which is it does have this, out of all the squashface or brachycephalic breeds, the English bulldog tends to have what we call the most, you know, airway distress, if I can say that, when you look at it as a breed. And maybe that's why it segregates there. Okay, so I've opened up this little Excel spreadsheet, and it's great. It lists the breeds that he tested in alphabetical order, and he lists the frequency. So he lists the amount that he found that don't have the mutation, that carry the mutation, and have both copies of the mutation. So he tested 401 Norwich Terriers, as the paper says in the Excel sheet as described, and he has found 33% are positive and 48% are carriers. And that's Norwich Terriers. When he looks at the bulldog, he finds 80% are positive and 12.5, which is similar to what we have, 12.5% carriers, but he's only tested 24 dogs. The French bulldog is interesting. He's found 3% are positive and 17% are carriers, and he's only tested 99. So what other breeds has he found? Interesting. Let's have a look. He's found carriers in the Stafford, carriers in the German Spitz, carriers in the Pomeranian, no carriers.
In some of them, he's only tested
one breed. He's included, you know, greyhounds, he's included Dobermans, he's included the Cavalier, where he tested 10 dogs. So when people ask me why am I including them in those breeds, I'm trying to gather some data.
Yeah, I mean, in many ways, you've got a lot more data than was in this original paper so far. So it's good that we're, you know, gathering this data, but it sounds as well like it's something that, you know, we don't need to worry about too much.
That's right. And if Jeffrey wants to reach out, I'm happy to share the data with him.
We'll send it to him.
I'm happy to be one of those names in the middle of a publication. So, yeah, the data's mimicking what the original paper has. We're getting more. We found some in the boxer as well, from what he can show us here. It's interesting data. So it's good. It's matching his frequency. So, again, it's all in the table there. If you download it, it's got the multiple breeds genotype for the Adam TS3 variant.
Yeah. But, I mean, it sounds like on the whole, you know, the key takeaway that I'm hearing is that, you know, this is a test that's still in its early stages. It's still for a lot of breeds, we're gathering data. And even where there is a positive result, it's still something which is, you know, just basically getting you to go and look at other tests and to go that little bit further to do the physical test that you need to. If your dog is at risk with, you know, the Adam TS3 variant, it probably means that you need to go and do those, you know, additional tests with your vet or just look into it a little bit further. You know, making rash decisions on the breeding program, you know, don't base it just on this one test.
Let me reinforce it. This paper was published in 2019. It's literally only a, you know, 2.5-year-old paper. You know, let's get serious here. The future research will be done and has to be done so that we can understand the real potential of this, you know, G to A variant and the potential use as a diagnostic marker. You know, currently we use it as a marker, but is it really one that is relevant to symptoms? We don't know yet, but it will have some use. It's it's identified one. There needs to be more research done. It has to be done. I think we want to clearly state that nothing really beats a great vet examination when it comes to a lot of things.
I think that's a very fair point. But, you know, you can understand if a new test comes up, people are curious, they want to know what it means. And, you know, I think hopefully this little chat has, you know, debunked a couple of myths, has answered some questions. And hopefully as a breeder and you're listening to this, you now know a little bit more about the test and how to interpret those results.
Yeah. And look, if people have got any questions, always reach out. You know, as I said, the most interesting thing that I found in my little research was that the, you know, the dolichocephalic breeds are less engaged. I think that's going to do more work into
that. Yeah, that's that.
The evolution is interesting, isn't it? The evolution from the wolf and how the skull has just changed based on human interaction, which sort of makes sense. I read somewhere that the size of the brain has actually decreased by 30% from when the wolf brain was. So, you know, that's again in the paper, and there's that really nice fox, the taming of the fox experiment, where they looked at brain morphology, where they domesticated the red fox and saw that it shrunk. So, you know, that again, so maybe we're just doing away with brain that is not required. Maybe having a big brain isn't that, you know, important or that vital.
No, George, look, thank you so much for that. I think great to get your thoughts on it, and great to go into the data and really demystify a new test. And yes, for anyone who's still got questions, do reach out to the Aurivet team. I'm sure they'll be happy to help you. And George, thanks again. I think we have really gone deep into Adam's TS3.
Yeah, let's do another one soon.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of What the Bark. Don't forget to hit subscribe on your favorite podcast platform and leave us a 5-star review if you enjoyed the podcast. You can visit rightpaw.com.au for your all-in-one place to find responsible, verified breeders. And you can visit aurivet.com.au for all your pet genetic testing needs. Remember to stay positive, and we'll see you in the next episode.